Live from New York City, it's The Gary Mel Show. And now, your host, Gary Mel.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Mel, on location, talking on a telephone. Hopefully tomorrow I'll be out of microphone. We're getting my portable Comrex unit, which is like a portable studio, shipped in to me. And we have a lot to share. And I'm going to ask you for your input today on several issues that I'm going to raise. And before I share my points of view, I'd like to hear yours. But we're going to begin with health and nutrition, a commentary from David McCary from Counterpunch about Donald Trump. We're also going to have some audio clips. One is on the history of racism in our integration program, one that you probably have not heard before. Also, the mounting student debt and what I consider an egregious act against so many millions, tens of millions of young people to put them in debt peonage, knowing full well that they do not have the jobs, and one starting now, no matter almost what the profession, with the exception of six different areas like medicine and nursing and engineering and architecture, there's not going to be a good-paying job. So why would someone want to go into a field incurring debt when they're not going to be able to pay the debt back, and frequently their parents or grandparents are going to be held legally responsible for that debt? And everyone's in on it. The banks know about it, the hedge funds know about it, the private equity firms know about it. They want debt. They prosper from debt because they're no longer in control on the interest rates. So when you default on a debt, you're no longer paying the interest you originally agreed to. You're paying now compounding interest. So I'm going to get into that. And then last week and the week before, I mentioned that it is the lie that we're living every day in our society that things are booming. You know, the economy is great. Unemployment's an all-time low. More African Americans are working than ever before. These are all lies. Well, I mentioned last week that we are, as a world, we're bankrupt. And over the weekend, there was a whole front page on this called Debt Becomes Us, the Globe needs to repay $247 trillion in loans. $247 trillion. We owe $200 trillion of that. So how exactly are we supposed to prosper? How are we supposed to get a living wage and have retirement that we can rely upon, as historically was the case, where people retired, they got a pension, they got Social Security, they went to someplace, Florida, and had a quality of life. All that is now being challenged for not all, but at least 200 and about in the neighborhood of around 225 million Americans. I'm going to deal with that. So you see, we have a lot to deal with today. But as always, we start with something we all benefit from, and that is the latest on health and healing. Always using peer-reviewed literature, always from respected institutions. Why? Because you would be led to believe that the information being shared is not scientifically backed up. It is. Turmeric. Now, that's that great spice that's used throughout much of the world. We don't use a lot in this country. But according to Montclair State College, as well as another research group, the extract of turmeric, which is curcumin, strikes at the root cause of cancer malignancy. So this is very important. A turmeric study published in Cancer Letters is paving the way for a revolution in the way we both understand and treat cancer. The article is titled, Targeting Cancer Stem Cells by Curcumin in Clinical Applications. And U.S. researchers evaluated the primary polyphenol in the Indian spice known as curcumin, cure, C-U-R, cumin, C-U-M-I-N, for its ability to target cancer stem cells, which are believed to be at the root cause of tumor formation and malignancy. Whereas conventional models of cancer assume that the majority of the cancer cells within a tumor possesses self-renewal capability to differing degrees, what we're talking about, conventional models propose that the initiation and maintenance and growth of a tumor is driven by a minor population of cancer cells termed cancer stem cells. And these cancer stem cells undergo continuous self-renewal and differentiate to heterogeneous cancer cells, yielding new tumors, and that's not good. In other words, the cancer stem cells are at the apex of a hierarchy of cancer cells within the tumor and are the mother lode of the various daughter cells that make it up, most of which are intrinsically benign. And they took a two-year study of curcumin and found that it interrupts that entire process. So that's one more reason that we should be using curcumin in our cancer therapies and curcumin to help prevent cancer. All you have to do is Google PubMed, cumin or turmeric, cancer, and you'll see thousands of studies in the peer-reviewed literature supporting it. So, one more way that we can prevent cancer and, wherever possible, reverse it. And that's just one item, by the way. In fact, the scientific literature that I studied this morning has over 800 health benefits of turmeric. So, for a lot of people, they've never heard of turmeric. They don't use it. But people in other cultures do, and they benefit. It regulates the cancer stem cell self-renewal pathway. It appears to directly and indirectly influence at least three self-renewal pathways within cancer stem cells. I won't go into the science of it, the Knot system and the SHH system, which is the Sonic Hedgehog 89, and the catenin, C-A-T-E-N-I-N. That's just the chemistry. But there's a lot of ways that curcumin modulation interferes in that cancer, and that's what we want. And it's harmless. It's safe. It is terrific for us. Now, also, cancer hijacks the microbiome to glut itself on glucose. This is according to University of Colorado. Now, let me put this in just very simple terms. Cancer needs energy to drive its out-of-control growth. It gets energy in the form of glucose, which is our blood sugar. In fact, consuming so much glucose that one method for imaging cancer simply looks for areas of extreme glucose consumption. Where there is consumption, there is cancer. But how does cancer get this glucose? According to the University of Colorado Cancer Center, published in the peer-reviewed journal Cancer Cell, it shows that leukemia undercuts the ability of normal cells to consume glucose, thus leaving more glucose available to feed its own growth. This is from the study. Quote, leukemia cells create a diabetic-like condition that reduces glucose going into normal cells, and as a consequence, there is more glucose available for the leukemia cells. Literally, they are stealing glucose from normal cells to drive growth of the tumor, end quote. And that's from Dr. Craig Jordan, investigator at the University of Colorado Cancer Center. So like diabetes, cancer strategies depend upon insulin, and healthy cells need insulin to use glucose. In diabetes, either the pancreas underproduces insulin or tissues cannot respond to insulin, and so cells are left starved for energy while glucose builds up in the blood. And the current study shows that leukemia goes about creating similar conditions of glucose buildup in two ways. First, the tumor cells trick fat cells into overproducing a protein called IGF-1BP, and this protein makes healthy cells less sensitive to insulin, meaning that when it's high, it takes more insulin to use glucose. It's a little complicated, but in lay language, one major difference in the guts of leukemic mice was the lack of a specific kind of bacteria known as bacteroids. B-A-C-T-E-R-O-I-D-S. And these bacteroids produce short-chain fatty acids that, in turn, feed the healthy cells lining your gut. And without these bacteroids, gut health suffers. And the current study shows that without bacteroids, gut health suffers in ways that specifically aid cancer. So what's the takeaway message in this? The healthier your bacteria, the healthier biome, the less likely it is that cancer will be able, including leukemia, to feed off of it. Now, have you noticed in people with cancer, they tend to be very weak. They frequently suffer from fatigue. They don't have that. They don't have the energy in the cells. And now we know why. So just imagine the more sugar that you give to a person with cancer, the more that sugar is eaten by the cancer cells. Cancer thrives on sugar, on glucose. So that's one way to show that the diet directly impacts this. Now, I've written several articles that you can read. There's a public service. I have thousands upon thousands of articles, 700 of which I've personally written, and that helps you understand the danger of sugar. Let me put it another way. If sugar were created for the first time today, it would never be allowed. It would be considered too dangerous. It would be a pathogen. It'd be worse than cigarette smoke if it were coming out today for the first time. So one of the ways I've helped so many people with cancer is I put them on a sugar-free diet, maintain a very healthy gut bacteria, and the healthier that gut bacteria, the less vulnerable it is to cancer using the gut bacteria to feed itself. Now, it's relatively simple. It's complicated to get to there, but it's simple once you understand cause and effect. Now, the Deutsche International Research Group says that cancer risk is due to certain lifestyle and environmental factors, and it's preventable. So they, in Germany, I'm only talking about Germany, they found that 4 in every 10 or 40% of all cancer is attributable to lifestyle and environmental factors. Smoking, low physical activity, overweight, and infections. These are the things, according to the German Cancer Research Center report, on how these risk factors affect a number of cancers. And this was published in a main cancer peer-reviewed journal. And in fact, it was a series of articles. And this came out of Heidelberg. And it's talking about all this. Now, what it left out of this, which is interesting, was diet. And they looked at 85,072 cases of cancer. And they found, wow, these could have been prevented. They looked at people with stomach cancer from the alcohol they consumed and the Helicobacter pylori and human papillomavirus have major roles in this setting. And again, this is lifestyle. But one thing that is important is the German population and many of the Eastern European countries, Czechoslovakia, Hungary, Latvia, Lithuania, Bulgaria, Romania, those countries have a high amount of animal protein, including pork and salted foods in the diet. And you see a very high risk rate in high blood pressure, heart disease, and stomach and colorectal cancer. They have a very low consumption of fiber, fruits, and vegetables, nuts and seeds. So everything that could cause a disease, they're doing. Everything that could prevent a disease, they're not. I remember, I'll give you an example. I went over to do research on a person who claimed that their clinic could help reverse much of the aging process. The gentleman was named Dr. Klaus Martin. In fact, I have photographs in the archives that you can see the clinic and him and his staff. And there were 50 guests. He only has 50 guests at a time. And he does a cell rejuvenation therapy. It was based upon the Niehans therapy of the Swiss physician that would take the cells, the embryonic cells out of a lamb and put it into the person, inject it, and they actually implanted it. And it was this huge needle. I mean, it was just like, I remember saying to Klaus at the time, I said, that looked like a screwdriver. That didn't look like a needle. Well, we're implanting the cells in there. But then the cells would take on the role. They were actually stem cells. They would go to the tissue that was damaged. For example, if you had a problem with your kidney, your liver, your spleen, they would go to that area and test done. And I verified these tests at the University of Heidelberg. They had over 500 studies in peer-reviewed literature there, none in America. No one was getting this in America. The first person to do it in America, I believe, was a Dr. Elliot Goldwag and Dr. Popoff, because I visited their clinic down in the Bahamas. And they had used the same therapy as Klaus Martin, injecting these fetal cells from the sheep, and it worked. Now, here was but there was a backstory to this. A, it worked, but B, of the 50 people I interviewed, all of them, not one was willing to change their lifestyle. Not one. Not a single thing would they change. And one guy said it best. He said, well, look, he said, I like smoking. I like drinking. I socialize and drink and smoke. Everyone does. Why should I change? I can come here every 5 years and, you know, pay $5,000 and get these injections, and I'm good to go again. Well, his logic is correct, but the construct of the logic is based upon a false notion that you couldn't have done this without the cells. And that's what he chose not to focus on. And I said, well, what if I told you that I'm doing research as the anti-aging scientist at the Institute of Applied Biology, where I'm reversing disease and reversing aging, but doing it with lifestyle, not with injections. He said, oh, that's too much of a hassle. And all of them pretty much said the same thing, and I interviewed each person separately and privately. And I said to Klaus Martin, I said, is this frustrating that no one's going to change anything? They're just going to come and get this kind of panacea? He said, yep. He said, it's frustrating because we feed him great food. And he did. He had juices and great food. They didn't care about that. But then when I was there a separate time and I was visiting Dr. Issel's clinic, in my personal opinion, the greatest cancer doctor in history. Yeah, Dr. Coley was good. Dr. Lincoln was good. But there's no one compared to the results that this titan of cancer therapy could achieve. And he had a clinic that was beautiful. It looked like a chateau. Didn't look like it. In fact, I think it was a chateau converted into a hospital. Because when you went in, you smelt the old wood, and everything was wood floors, and nothing was antiseptic smelling. And he insisted that you had to drink like 16 glasses of juice a day, all organically made there, and then you had to have all these enzymes and probiotics before anyone in America knew what a probiotic was. No one knew probiotics at that time in the 70s. He was giving people 100 billion probiotics a day. And I will never forget the first time I went there, I didn't see anyone, and I thought maybe I'd gone the wrong place, but the sign down the front said it was at Tegernsee Lake, and the clinic, the Issel's clinic, and there was one man. It turned out he was from Chicago. He was a dentist, and he was putting on his running outfit, and I said, where is everyone? He said, they're up on the mountain. I said, what mountain? He's behind us. He's come with me. So I went up, and they were all in this kind of little grassy, beautiful plateau overlooking this gorgeous lake. And there was Issel's. He had just taken their blood, and then he put on this music, and I didn't realize there was a speaker right behind me, and suddenly the Overture of 1812 came bursting out. But before he put on the music, he said, visualize that you're on a beautiful horse. It can be a black horse, a white horse, and you draw your swords, and these are long swords, and you start to march into the Valley of Death. And in front of you are millions of the enemy. They're there to kill you. These are the cancer cells. But on this day, in this moment, you will prevail. You will take your swords and you will slay the cancer cells. And with that, on came the music. Now, the people had their eyes closed and they're sitting there. And you could see the bodies moving. You could see what they were feeling. And this was just, I'd never experienced anything like this in my life. And afterwards, about 15 minutes later, he took their blood again. and he tripled their natural killer cell activity, and that's what really kills the cancer cells in your body. So he was doing something that no one else in the world did. He did, and it would later be verified by others that body-mind medicine could impact a person's biochemistry. In effect, you're unleashing the body's natural innate healing capacity against the cancer. If you walk around depressed and anxious, you can't do that. And a woman named Dome, I believe it was Thelma Dome, but with a different spelling, her sons were oncologists, her husband was an oncologist, and she was there because she had been diagnosed with terminal cancer, and her husband said, look, there's nothing we can do, and I'm not going to give you the experimental drug because we all know the outcome of that. I'm not going to watch you die like that. Why don't we go on a trip around the world and live our last weeks together that way? And she was going to do that until she heard about this place. And then she said, no, I'm going to go there. They got really angry at her. What are you going there for? She said, well, if I'm going to die, I'm going to die fighting. I'm not going to die at sightseeing. And she went. And within 3 months, her cancer was 80% gone. So she didn't go home. She stayed there to help the other women who were coming there understanding what she had experienced and others experienced and how she was helping them in their journey. I thought that was extremely noble, extremely spiritual, extremely kind of her. Because when you're sick and you're scared and you don't know what to expect and this is all alien to you, and it's nice to have someone who's there helping you in the transition to be a part of your support team. And she did it. In any case, I went into the lab. I saw all the stuff he was doing. He did everything, everything holistic he did. Got rid of local focal infections and built up the body's immune system and the biome, and he had the highest single cure rate for terminal cancer of anyone in history. And it was independently verified 3 separate times. Yet you would never know that in America. He was demonized. He was criticized. And the American Cancer Society, an organization I would never give a nickel to, there was a man who ran their cancer management list, and this was a blacklist. So I went to meet him. I got to meet him because Pat McGrady Sr. introduced us, and otherwise he wouldn't have met with me. And I said, sir, I see that you have what amounts to an unproven method of cancer management list, a blacklist. And he said, yep. And I said, so in other words, to get in that list, you have to be a quack. He said, yep. So there's no legitimacy. He said, none. I said, well, tell me what is in your list about Dr. Joseph Issel. Well, he claims, you know, with some secret cure and very expensive to be curing people, but there's no proof he's cured anyone. And where did you read about Joseph Issel? And believe it or not, the only information he had in his file, the only thing, was from one of these tabloids, like the National Enquirer from Europe, saying that this man was claiming to, you know, cure people. And I said, well, do you have any proof? Has anyone from the cancer establishment ever gone there? Nope. You ever speak to him? Nope. You ever speak to any of his 55,000 patients? Nope. I just got back from there. And he invites people from all over the world. And there were a group of doctors there. Dr. Anderson, very famous doctor, Queen's College. I spoke with him, met with him. The very famous multi-award-winning producer for the BBC, Gordon Higginson. I had to go to Ireland. I met him. He did a documentary on this. It was called Go Climb the Mountain. Have you seen it? Nope. And he followed his whole BBC crew, tracked down people from all over the world that had been 5 years out of treatment from Issel's, meaning 5 years since Issel's treated them and no one else did, and they were cured. Issel's has never claimed a secrecy of anything. He publishes his results, and his therapy only cost about $5,000 for the whole month, or one-tenth what it costs at Sloan Kettering. And he is open. His files are open. When I was there, I met 6 other doctors and scientists. So wouldn't it behoove you to go there before you attack and ruin a person's reputation? But more importantly, think of how many people in America will be deprived of that possibility of being saved because of what misinformation you had. And I said, now, you also have information here on Dr. Lawrence Burton. Have you spoke with him? Nope. Got any of his writings? Nope. He's published 67 articles in peer-reviewed journal. He was funded by the Damon Runyon Foundation. He was funded by the National Institutes of Health. He was part of Dr. Rutino's team at St. Vincent's. You're calling him a quack. He doesn't qualify on any level. None of these. In fact, I gave him seven names. I said, please show me any legitimacy to these people being destroyed, their reputation destroyed, because of the American Cancer Society. He couldn't do it, and that was the end of the conversation. And that's when I went after the American Cancer Society and wrote an article on him. And the person that supplied me with the information was the top person at American Cancer Society's public relations, ran the division. And his son, by the way, was a award-winning journalist, Pat McGrady Sr., and Pat McGrady Jr. was his son who introduced me to his father, and that opened up this whole door to the politics of cancer. Nobody had written on this, no national publication. That was the first, and then it went on to do, I did a 2020 special, which won two Emmys, and a 60-minute special, one on Lawrence Burton, one on Stanislaw Brzezinski. Now, could you imagine today what Wikipedia would have done with these people? Oh, they'd be quacks and crucified. Did anyone go to talk with them, interview their patients? No. But we did, and they're legitimate. That's the society we live in today. I just want to end that part of our discussion, because now I want to do a commentary, a continuation, one that our scholars and residents, Richard Gale and myself, have worked on to show you why. And this is short. I'm going to do a series of short ones, not about me, but rather about highly respected, very well-credentialed, outstanding physicians and scientists who are being pillared and destroyed on Wikipedia. So this is systemic. We're going to take a brief break. We're 26 minutes into our program. A brief but very important continuation of our challenge to Jimmy Wales and Wikipedia and what it really represents instead of what the public and the IRS and others believe it represents. And for your information, I have at least 20 more of these coming just on people who've been vilified, and everything they've done to try to correct their vilification has not worked. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'm Gary Nall on location, helping our sister station, WBAI, where I've been for 42 years, and we have earned enough income from our effort to help pay for over 1,000 premiums. So I believe everyone from our last fund drive now will get their premiums. So it's a good thing. This is a continuation of our Wikipedia research. To my knowledge, and I can be wrong on this, we are the first people to do an in-depth, two-year, major, full-time investigative report, and we're only presenting our information now that our results are in. We did not go in with a bias. We went in to look for the truth. I'm asking the people in this audience, please read the articles. Share them with everyone you know. And by the way, I want to thank the 10,000-plus people who downloaded the program just yesterday on the weekend, and it's increasing. So we've got a lot of people paying attention. Share this information. Remember, the mainstream media won't touch it. Members of Congress won't touch it. I doubt the IRS at this moment will touch it. But we do know someone who will. That story coming in about 3 months. And when it comes, it's a tsunami. Today's story, Wikipedia page for Dean Radin, R-A-D-I-N. Now, many therapeutic modalities in natural and non-conventional medicine share principles in common with parapsychology. This is particularly true of mind-body medicine, the power of the mind to initiate and facilitate healing. some medical practices are based upon theories of energy, such as acupuncture, energy medicine and therapeutic touch, and the healing ability of martial arts, such as Tai Chi and Qigong. And energy and theories of consciousness play a large role in parapsychology, or what we call PSI, PSI research. Therefore, in addition to investigating persons in non-conventional medical professions who have been victimized by skeptics on Wikipedia, we will also consider many prominent scientists who have suffered from character assassination by this tiny group of skeptics who consistently ignore Wikipedia's editorial rules for living persons. Dr. Dean Radin is currently the science chief scientist at the Institute of Noetic Sciences and a distinguished associate professor at the California Institute of Integral Studies. Now, although much of his current scientific research has explored paranormal phenomena and theories of non-local consciousness, he has never identified himself as a psychic. He states his role has been strictly that of a scientist investigating and researching such phenomena. He has degrees in electrical engineering, focusing on cybernetics and control systems. He later received his doctorate in psychology from the University of Illinois. He has held appointments at AT&T Lab Bell Laboratories, Princeton University, University of Edinburgh, and Stanford University's Research Institute. He was also on the faculty of the University of Nevada, and back in 1979, Dr. Radin was one of the first to develop the first computer-based artificial intelligence training system. For skeptics and reductionist scientists in general, who embrace an ultra-strict, mechanistic, reductionist, Newtonian, Darwinian view of reality, Dr. Radin's sin was to explore parapsychology experiences. His Wikipedia page makes no acknowledgement that he was already a highly respected scientist when accepted to work with the secret Stargate project coordinated by the U.S. Army and the Defense Intelligence Agency and the SRI International at Fort Meade. The project was dedicated to researching the potential use of psychic skills, including clairvoyance and remote viewing, for domestic intelligence and military operations. Although the project was purported to have been officially terminated in 1995, it had been active for 17 years. It was only after the project was transferred to the CIA that the government publicly stated that the project's research was inconclusive and therefore did not warrant further investigation. Certainly, skeptics would accept the project's conclusions at face value. It fits well with their campaign to discredit the existence of paranormal and psychic experiences and capabilities. But controversies have remained over the project's successes and failures. Many who were involved in the project, such as Dr. Radin, have continued research in parapsychology in the field of consciousness studies. Others have gone public to speak about the project's achievements. In 2001, Dr. Radin moved on to become a senior scientist at the Institute of Noetic Sciences, co-founded in 1973 by Apollo 14 astronaut and the sixth person to walk on the moon, Edgar Mitchell. I'm sure many in this audience remember that it was during the Apollo lunar mission that Captain Mitchell claimed to have had mystical experiences that he later found described in ancient Hindu yoga text. It was due to his personal mystical experiences in outer space that inspired Mitchell to dedicate his future work towards a scientific investigation into parapsychology. So upon his retirement from NASA, Mitchell founded a company to promote ecologically pure products and services. Very early, Mitchell had realized our planet and society would face severe ecological problems in the future. Well, Dr. Radin's Wikipedia page, launched in August 2004, has been edited numerous times during the past 14 years. It's an excellent example of skeptics' editorial strategies. The original biography was short and innocuous, five short paragraphs containing a straightforward biographical profile of 11 sentences. Now that is morphed into a lengthy essay devoted to referencing Radin's critics in a manner that promulgates the skeptic doctrine that paranormal experiences do not exist and most claims are hoaxes by charlatans. In his page's editorial history, One typical skeptical editor under the pseudonym Shusha23 attempted to include the sentence, quote, Dean Radin, born February 29, 1952, is a pseudoscientist who defrauds millions of people a day with his book, The Conscious Universe, end quote. Fortunately, Shusha23 was banned from editorial privileges. During a conversation that we had with Dr. Radin, he stated that numerous attempts by him and others to correct his biographical page have been made over the years. He noted that corrections can be immediately reverted back within 30 minutes. Even the Nobel Prize laureate in physics, Dr. Brian Josephson, made unsuccessful efforts to edit Radin's page in August 2014. Keeping true to the legitimate scientific perspective, Radin acknowledges the controversies and debates regarding parapsychology research and the conflicting neuroscientific theories about the nature and function of consciousness. As with many scientists and medical doctors and alternative health practitioners with whom we have spoken regarding misinformation and distortions and character assassinations by skeptic editors on their Wikipedia pages, Dr. Radin simply wants balance. He writes, quote, there should always be room for scholarly debates. But there's no sense of balance whatsoever on his biography because Wikipedia skeptics are largely not scholars. They're not experts in these fields. They have no background whatsoever, just opinions. Unlike the people actually in the field who are true professionals and scholars. And they criticize the true professional and scholar, having none of their background, none of their experience, as if they are all-knowing. Dr. Radin is outspoken against the skeptical creed and its tactic on Wikipedia. He's written about the skeptic fallacy in his books. Perhaps this is one reason why he was so harshly targeted by skeptics on Wikipedia. He states that his Wikipedia article is, quote, slanted by only citing the opinions of extreme skeptics, most of whom are ignorant of the relevant literature, methods, and history of psi research. For example, these skeptics often claim that the results of experimental psi research are so rife with fraud that none of it can be believed. That claim confuses con artists who pretend to be psychic with the scientific study of psi. The fact is that there are less than a handful of demonstrated or suspected cases of experimental fraud in the entire history of psi research, end quote. People visiting Wikipedia page get their first snapshot of a person's biography or a subject from the first lead paragraphs. These are the principal statements that frame the remainder of an entry. For biographies of living persons, it is the lead section that can boost or destroy a person's career and reputation. Radin's lead section doesn't identify him as a doctor. And the fourth sentence immediately starts a rampage of criticism and accusations that continue throughout the page. Dr. Radin's books have been praised by two Nobel Prize winners, Dr. Curry Mullis, who I know and filmed, who invented PCR technology, and Dr. Brian Josephson, who received the Nobel Prize in physics at the age of 22 while at Cambridge University. Other noteworthy voices praising his work are molecular biologist, neuroscientist Dr. David Presti at the University of California, Berkeley, cognitive neuroscientist Mario Beauregard at the University of Arizona, and Dr. Michael Block at the University of San Francisco, Dr. Paul Werbos, program director at the National Science Foundation, Stanford professor emeritus of physics Dr. Peter Sturrock, and the renowned public advocate attorney Daniel Sheehan, who you've heard on this program many times, best known for his roles in the Pentagon Papers. Without him, they wouldn't have been published. The Karen Silkwood murder case, he found them guilty. And Iran-Contra scandal, plus the Three Mile Island and Standing Rock trials, etc. Nevertheless, his Wikipedia biography, quote, fails to mention any of the scientists who I just talked about, who endorses his work, including the two Nobel laureates, a program director for the National Science Foundation, and a past president of the American Statistical Association. And these people are the recipients, as is he, of major awards from the National Institutes of Health and the National Academy of Sciences, and many of their scientists and scholars. Radin's book, The Conscious Universe, was Amazon's number one parapsychology book, received the 1997 Book Award from the Scientific and Medical Network and the Best Book Award from the Animist. It has also been translated into 8 languages. None of this is noted on Radin's Wikipedia page. Rather, the book's description is confined to the comments and reviews of noted skeptics and critics, including the radical skeptic Robert Todd Carroll, author of the Skeptics Dictionary, and a fellow of the Committee for Skeptical Inquiry, and a review book published in Nature. And the Nature review later was found to contain blatant errors, and skeptics have based their criticisms on these errors, which Nature eventually corrected, but his Wikipedia page does not indicate those corrections. Critiques of another Radin book, such as Supernormal, published by Deepak Chopra, relies upon a review from the Skeptical Inquirer to discredit its premises. The Wikipedia review of the book makes no clear mention of what the book is actually about or states anything in clear words. Radin's premises is not described in the book. They don't allow it. The Skeptical Inquirer is a popular bimonthly magazine, popular among skeptics and targeted to a general audience. It is not peer-reviewed, nor is it recognized as a major publication of any valuable means for objective analysis and commentary. It's a propaganda publication on par with religious evangelical magazines. It is intended to advance a religious belief under the banner of skeptical scientism. Referencing the Skeptical Inquirer as a legitimate resource for information about a living person is a direct violation of Wikipedia's editorial policies. In summary, for over 30 years, Dr. Radin has become a leading scientist and commentator on parapsychology research, and besides his work being recognized by numerous and famous and acknowledged scientists and professors worldwide, who hold credentials far above what is necessary for referencing on Wikipedia, he actually shares something in common with skeptics. He writes on his webpage, quote, "Regarding religion, I am an agnostic, and religious beliefs have played no part in my life. I've maintained a daily meditation practice for many years for the same reason I exercise. The health benefits are obvious," end quote. But his treason has been to accommodate a scientific perspective towards subjects that are held anathema by the fundamentalist of skepticism. For this breach against skeptics' 19th century view of the world and reality, he has been forced into a limbo of condemnation on Wikipedia. Please download this article, download the program, and share it with as many people as possible. We have a lot more coming, including our own biography, not his, not the sanitized, protected version on Wikipedia, but Jimmy Wells, coming at you real soon for the whole world, will be what we consider a more objective biography, and all the skeptics as well. Expect about 50 more articles coming your way. It takes a long time and a lot of effort for the truth to emerge, but sooner or later, it will. And also coming up this week, a Rupert Sheldrake, one of the greatest minds in the world. And you're going to learn a lot about morphogenic fields and how being one of the brightest persons on the planet also made you one of the most hated by the skeptics and by Wikipedia. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
I know you want to leave me, but I refuse to let you go. If I have to beg, plead for your sympathy, I don't mind, 'cause you mean that much to me. Ain't too proud to beg, and you know it. Please don't leave me, girl. Ain't too proud to plead, baby, baby. Please don't leave me, girl.
I'd like to welcome all of you to this program. I'm Gary Nall, and we spend some time hitting on commentaries that we believe are important. Tomorrow, I'm going to give my perspective on what I see as being an inability to share the full truth about what we see happening every day, especially in the body politic, where we make judgments before we have proof. where we condemn people before we have all the evidence in hand. And that, to me, should be challenged. For example, I'll just give you one simple example. For the movement that says, we support her, meaning any woman with any claim. Okay. So we believe. We believe. Good. I'm glad you do. But what happened to all the millions of moms who have vaccine-injured children? That's correct. We are all told believe women, yet many who embrace the Believe Women movement would add an exception, women who claim they have a vaccine-injured child. In that case, they are just deluded, emotionally distraught mothers looking for something and someone to blame. And let's throw in that they are ignorant and looking for money. Yeah. I've interviewed thousands of them. Over 500 for one film I did. I found not one of them delusional, ignorant, highly educated on the subject. They got educated about the dangers of vaccines. And yet they're all dismissed out of hand. Not just out of hand, backhanded, thrown out. So believe women? Hardly. Every day women are told by their child's doctor that their child's pain, illness, loss of skills, and regression into autism that began immediately after vaccine is just a coincidence. They're told that their child was never developed beautifully. They're just remembering incorrectly. They're forgetting about the symptoms the child showed. Mom just never noticed. It's her fault. This course of denial is joined by the media and our political leaders. Even when a family wins a rare decision in the vaccine court, it is dismissed as an overly generous act of a benevolent system and a sympathetic jury, though there are no juries in the vaccine court. These same physicians are quick to fire parents as patients when they don't toe the line and do precisely what they're told and when to do it. Listen to us or we will show you the door. Women did not see what they saw only days after seeing it. Nope. Did not experience what they experienced. Have unreliable memories. These are women who must not be believed, who don't understand the science, who threaten the status quo, who must sit down and shut up. So the Hawaiian senator, you shouldn't have told just the men, every man, to shut up. Are you including all black men to shut up? All Hispanics to shut up? All those who are in prison falsely accused to shut up? My God, what have we become? Now you're telling all those women, shut up? If your child has been vaccine damaged, because the left in particular has been notorious for dismissing any of the claims about dangers of vaccine, embracing vaccines, in fact. So what we have today, we have a group of women, millions, who are told you don't understand science. They do. These moms are marginalized and kicked to the curb. Worse yet, their kids are discarded. Our government ignores the lives ruined, pats us on the head, and tells us that we're just wrong. Causation and correlation are two different things, Big Pharma says. They pay the messengers, and they go forth. This denial, the experience of hundreds of thousands of women on an annual basis, and their children must end. Not only is it wrong on a moral level, it is a prejudice at odds with verifiable facts. Keep that in mind the next time you tend to be highly selective in who to believe. But more importantly today, is, did we get Donald Trump because we deserved him? Now, you all know my views on Trump. I've said it, and I'll say it again. He is like the idiot savant who cannot learn and cannot be taught. The trouble is, he is not the savant part. But that's secondary. According to David McCrary, besides the grinding and debilitating repetition, the reason that David can't bear to watch professional comedians do their Donald Trump shtick is that the material is so obviously based on the premise that this guy is somehow unworthy of being our president, that his being elected was a monumental goof, a mistake, that we don't deserve him, in addition to being insufferably smug and self-congratulatory, that assumption is demonstrably false. If we step back and take an unsentimental, warts-and-all look at ourselves, we realize that Trump is not only worthy of being president, he seems the obvious choice for it, the loathsome destination of an inevitable journey. Consider, the U.S. is first and foremost a nation of consumers. Manufacturers know it, advertisers know it, the Ukrainians know it, Trump knows it. Indeed, there's nothing more American than advertising and buying what is promoted. And say what you will, Trump is the first and foremost a fanatical salesman and promoter. Consider, we Americans are practical people, which is why we don't form queues at poetry readings. There's no shame in that. We simply aren't a nation of poetry lovers. But we do form queues, often unbelievably long lines, beginning at midnight, waiting for the store to open so we can purchase the newest technology. That's because we're a nation addicted to buying stuff, and Trump knows how to sell stuff. Consider, we gush over rich people, we idolize them, but because that realization seems vaguely unchristian, we pretend we don't. We tell our children that money isn't everything, but we don't even believe that ourselves. We are in awe of Wall Street because Wall Street is the Taj Mahal of the rich, and Trump is rich. Consider, we love celebrities, and Trump was a TV celebrity. We love glamour, and the Trumps are glamorous. Wife Melania and daughter Ivanka are exotic creatures. Granted, that is more a testament to cosmetic surgery than the generosity of Mother Nature, but exotic creatures nonetheless. And as much as we pretend to respect authenticity, we don't. Plastic is what we love, from credit cards to cosmetic surgery. Consider, unlike much of the world, we Americans always despise intellectuals. We pretend we don't, but we do. We resent cultural snobs, know-it-alls, smarty-pants, media types, and deep thinkers, and we admire that salt-of-the-earth businessman, self-made moguls, and counterintuitively affected military officers. Remember, George Bush was elected in part because he's the kind of guy you want to go have a beer with. That's partly because of our native egalitarianism, and partly because we don't wish to be reminded of our ignorance. We prefer brevity and plain talk to complexity. We embrace slogans, make America great, and avoid nuance and ambiguity and self-doubt. Arguably, if we don't count Ronald Reagan, Trump is the most anti-intellectual president since Andrew Jackson. Consider, we admire conspicuous muscle and power. Accordingly, as long as the combat doesn't occur on our own soil, we prefer war to peace. We pretend we don't, but we do. I just did a lecture this morning at 7 o'clock to a group of people talking about how sensitive we are to other people when, in fact, every day 5,000 children are starving and dying in a country that we're supporting that effort, in Yemen. When was the last time we had someone go to Yemen from the networks to show what we've done there? You won't see it. No. You see a defense budget that was passed easily by Democrats and Republicans. It was absurdly bloated. It's a complete waste. And it's absolutely criminal that we don't have any money left over for real help of the Americans. We don't have enough because we're never engaged in anything that challenges military altruism that has defined us since the end of World War II. Consider, we Americans are narcissistic people. We pretend we aren't, but we are. We don't have to be tied down and waterboarded to confess that we think we're the greatest country in the world, not only the greatest country in the world, but very likely the greatest country in history of the world. If that ain't narcissism, what is? And yet, for all this, we still pretend we don't deserve Trump. We still pretend to be surprised that we elected a shallow, dishonest, narcissistic bully as our president. As Kurt Vonnegut wrote in Mother Night, we are what we pretend to be. So we must be very careful about what we pretend. And then come with me, if you would please, and interview all the Democrats and the unionists and the coal miners and the steel mills in Katanning, Pennsylvania, and Weirton, West Virginia. These were not people who would change course easily, yet these were Democrats. And they either didn't vote or voted for Trump out of anger. They were angry voters because those who promised them after coming in and kissing their babies and eating their hot dog and giving them a thumbs up, vote for me and I'll set the record straight. I'll see that your job stays and that the Clintons created NAFTA and GATT. And we gave a Nobel Prize, Peace Prize, to a man who arrested and imprisoned more whistleblowers than all the presidents in American history, who said, trust me, and knew all along that his health care was being written by the insurance and pharmaceutical industries. And all the things that we could have done, had we been honest, didn't happen because our politicians lied. And then one day people finally had, they reached the final tipping point, and it tipped. And instead of being honest and reflective and seeing what promises should be honored, how did he go about de-ghettoize America, cities, how to bring jobs back, how to increase the minimum wage, how to make sure that no corporation gets government contracts that's not giving a person a living wage. All this could have been done. Not a single thing was done. We deal in euphemisms and likable personalities and whether or not a person looks presidential. We care not what their ultimate policy is, even when it's devastatingly against us. So for those who call everyone who voted for Trump a deplorable, despicable, redneck, racist, misogynist person, stop for a moment and ask yourself, and what exactly did the Democrats do when they were in power and could have honored these same people? And before you call someone those names, shouldn't you visit them, look at their refrigerator, look at their garage, look at their bank account, look in their eyes and ask yourself, why are you on all of these opiates in West Virginia and Pennsylvania and Kentucky and Louisiana and Tennessee? Your home doesn't have flood insurance, yet it's flooding now twice a year. And what have we done for them? And how much longer do you think they're going to be suffering from that Stockholm syndrome and supporting the people who lied to them? I'm just asking for you to have a moment of reflection before you have 2 years of nonstop degradation of these same people. At the end, nothing is done for them from the left or the right, from conservative or liberal. They are the victims of a system that is so corrupt and so vile that there is no effort nor possibility of reforming it. I'm Gary Noll. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.